we all daven and say Aleinu at the end of davening every single day, whether you daven Shachar, Mincha, or Maariv. And if you use an article sitter or whatever sitters you use, you all know that under Aleinu, it has the following line. It says, some people say the following three psukim. And it quotes three psukim from Tanakh that reflect in different ideas. By show of hands, how many people say those psukim after Aleinu? Okay, a lot. So what we want to discuss tonight is the history and the meaning behind those three psukim, where they come from. And let's begin with the psukim in relation to Tefillin Aleinu. Before we get to the source of them, let's just discuss how they came into the Siddur. The earliest source for the three psukim is a commentary on the Megillas Esther by Rosh Shlomo Alkevitz. You know Rosh Shlomo Alkevitz as the author of Lecha Dodi. But in addition to authoring Lecha Dodi, I mean, maybe you know the famous story about the guy who went to the cemetery and he had a picture. He was a convert. His mother was a Jewish and his father was an Arab. There's a famous story about that. But in addition to that, Rosh Shlomo Alkevitz, who lived in Tzfat at the same time, listen to this minion. They all daven together. Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and Rosh Shlomo Alkevitz, and Rav Moshe Alshech, the Alshech on Chumash, and Rav Moshe Cordovero, the author of the Tomer Devorah, the prime contemporary of the Arizal, all davened together in Sfas at the same time. It was quite a shul. It was very impressive. And Rosh Shlomo Alkevitz wrote a commentary on Megillas Esther called the Manos HaLevi, the gift of the Levi. And the legend is that he was so poor that he couldn't afford to give Mishloach Manos to another person. The legend is perhaps his father-in-law. So he wrote a commentary on Megillas Esther as his Mishloach Manos, because he was so poor. And the Manos HaLevi, the gift of the Levi, Rosh Shlomo Alkevitz is a Levi, was his Mishloach Manos. That leads to another discussion as to whether you can give Divrei Torah as Mishloach Manos, but not for right now. So he writes in his Perush on Megillas Esther, the name of Rav Yehuda Ibn Shoshan, who lived sometime in the 1400s, that because of a medrash we're about to learn, the people of Provence, which was a region in France, so they would add these three psukim to the end of their davening each and every day. And this minhag of quoting these three psukim we're going to discuss is quoted by the Taz on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, and the Chidah, or the great Sephardi Gedolim as well. And over time, it kind of made its way into the Siddur. And the relationship to Aleinu is probably inexact. To truth be told, I don't know if anybody had this misconception beforehand, but the three psukim that are printed after Aleinu have absolutely nothing to do with Aleinu, technically. There's no connection between the two. It just happens to be that when it made its way into the Siddur over time, it was just stuck at the end of the Siddur, like at the end of Davening. Like some people say the six Zechiros, or some people say Yeser Sadibros, or things like that. So those three psukim were kind of just shoved to the end of the Siddur. And in modern printing, it was kind of just put after later. There's no technical connection between the two. So our discussion tonight is not a discussion about Aleinu. It's those three psukim on their own, but perhaps we can come away with a reference as why these are parting messages when we do leave shul. I saw that so many of us do say these three psukim. So we want to discuss what is the message of those three psukim that we say, and what is really its connection to Purim as well. Let's begin. We're going to learn a medrash together. I clearly did not make enough sheets, but we're going to learn a medrash together. If we can spread out the sheets so we can share. And in my mind, it is one of my most favorite midrashim. It is the most beautiful, one of the most beautiful midrashim in all of Esther Rabbah, in all the collection of midrashim. And here we have seats on the side. So we have chairs. We're over here. So it is probably one of the most beautiful midrashim. And just before we read the medrash, I just want to paint a scene. I want to paint a picture for where this medrash is coming into the story. Mordechai has just heard about the gzeira of the king, Haman. And he is broken. He is shattered. What is it going to be with the future of the Jewish people? Literally a death sentence on young and old man and woman. All of the Jewish people lay in the hands of Haman and Achashverosh. And this is it. And Mordechai doesn't know where to turn. This is literally the end of the line. Perhaps this is the annihilation of the Jewish people. And he walks away from the courtyard of the king. And we know, as we read tonight, he puts on sack ve'efer. He dresses in sackcloth, the universal sign of mourning. And his hair is torn out. And he is bitter. And he is literally walking down the street screaming, crying. What is going to be with the Jewish people? L'masha, we think of Yirmiyahu walking in the days of the Chorban, screaming and crying. What's going to be with the Kadosh Baruch Hu's people? And Mordechai thinks this is the end of the line. And as he's walking down the street, the following things happens. B'shah shenecham tu osan ha'igeres v'nostum be'ad Haman. When the letter was sealed, signed, and delivered by Haman. V'yo sameachu v'chol b'nei v'chavruso. And Haman was happy about what had happened. U'pigu b'mordechai shu holech lifneham. And Haman, imagine the awkwardness of the situation. Mordechai is walking down the street screaming and crying because this is the end of his people. And Haman is happy. And they happen to come to like a corner at the same time. We've all had awkward encounters in our lives. This is probably one of the more awkward encounters in the history of mankind. V'ra Mordechai shlosha tinokos. And out of the corner of Mordechai's eye, he sees three children. Shahu bayimi beis ha'sefer, who are coming out of school. Imagine you're back in Eretz Yisrael, three little Hasidish kids with payas around their ears. They're so cute, coming down with their backpacks out of school. It's amazing. Mordechai sees them coming down the street. And he's looking at Haman, but he's distracted by the three boys. And he turns away from Haman, and he walks in the direction of the three boys. Shayubai mi beis sefer. Veratz Mordechai achareyav. He doesn't walk. He runs. He takes off in a sprint down the street to catch up with those three boys. Out of breath. Haman sees Mordechai and he says, what's up with this guy? What's this guy doing? We got to find out. And him and his chabura, his friends, start running after Mordechai. So imagine the scene. You have three kids at the end of the block. Mordechai is racing down the street, and then Haman and his friends are racing after Mordechai down the street. And Mordechai comes to a stop. Kivin shehigia Mordechai, eitzel hatinokos, shal echad mehem. And he asked them, the first boy, a question. And he said three important words. Psok li psukech. Tell me what pasuk you learned in yeshiva today. What are you up to? Now, before we continue, I need a little bit of background. We have a tradition in the history of Klal Yisrael that children, when they learn Torah, they have a mini form of nevuah. And when you ask them what they're learning, what their response is a nevuah ktsas, says the Shach. And this is actually cited in Shulchan Aruch as something that's not to considered to be avodah zarah. It's not considered to be superstitious or silly. Psokli psukeich, what pasuk are you learning? This is in fact the source of the concept of the Goral Hagra. Has anybody heard of the Goral Hagra before? Show of hands? No? We're not going to get into it tonight, and perhaps another conversation, but the Goral, attributed to the Vilna Gaon, which you would flip through pages of Tanakh in order to make a decision about how to continue in life. Perhaps the most famous one, Rav Aaron Cutler, didn't know whether he should come to America or Eretz Yisrael, and it was in the beginning of World War II when he opened up a Tanakh and he flipped to a Pasuk, and the Pasuk was, and Hashem said to Aaron, go to the Midbar to your brother Moshe and find him there. And his was Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Midbar of America. And Rav Aaron Cutler, based on that story, went to America, not to Eretz Yisrael, and the rest is the history of Torah in America because of that Goral Hagra. But this is the source, that we look at the psukim of children, we look at the Torah to guide where we should go. So the child said to Mordechai, he said, Amar Lei, the first pasuk, you all know this because you all say it, Al tira mi pachad pisom umisos rishayim chisavu, don't be afraid of fear, sudden fear, and the plans of the rishayim are going to be taken care of. So Mordechai then turned to the second boy. Pasach Hashiri v'Amar, Ani Karisi Hayom Ubaze, Ani Karisa Hayom Uvazeh Pasach. This is the Pasach I learned. Amanis v'Bei Sefer, Utsu Eitz of Asufar, Davu Davu V'Lo Yakum Ki Manukel. And the child told Mordechai, they plan, they have Eitzos, they Davu Davu, they're working on different projects, V'Lo Yakum, but it won't come to fruition, because Hashem is with us. And then the third son, the third boy said, Pasach Ashlishi v'amar, v'ad zikna anihu, v'ad seva aniyespol, ani asisi v'aniyesa aniyespol evamalait. And the child said, this is the Pasach, I am old, and until I'm old I will be patient, and I will act, and I will carry, and I will have the patience and the burden to deal with Klal Yisrael. Those are the three Pasach of Mordechai heard. V'kevan shishama Mordechai kach. When Mordechai heard that, Sachak v'haya sameach simcha gedola. The same man who was in sackcloth and crying and bewildered and didn't know where to turn, a smile broke out on his face. And he was so happy. Amar lo Haman, mihu zos ha-simcha she-simcha l'divrei ha-tinok o-seilo. Mordechai, what is wrong with you? I just signed your death sentence. Why are you smiling? So Amar al-besoros tovos she-besrani she-lefachin min ha-eitza ha-ra she-yatzas aleinu. These children told me not to be scared of what's going to be with you. Miyad kas Haman. And Haman got upset and he said, I'm going to go and kill the children first. Obviously, that didn't work out. And discussion for another time is the role of children in the story of Purim. But the end of the Medrash is not for us. What is going on in this Medrash? It is such a beautiful Medrash. It is such a poignant Medrash. The turning point in the story of Mordechai and Haman. What is going on with these three psukim? What's Mordechai's issue? Because before you know the answer, you have to know what's bothering Mordechai that these three psukim are coming to answer. And at the end of the day, what are the psukim answering? So we're going to give three approaches. We're going to do the first two very quickly. We're going to do the famous pshat. When anybody ever discusses this medrash, they quote the pshat of the Vilna Gaon. We'll do a lesser-known pshat, and then we're going to spend the most time on one that I think is a powerful explanation. So let's go quickly for the first two, and then we'll spend more time on the third one. This is the explanation of the Gra. The Vilna Gaon and the Kol Eliyahu, one of the major collections of the Vilna Gaon's Zivrei Torah, explains that there are three times in the history of the Jewish people that Amalek attack. And all three of these psukim respond to the three times that Amalek comes against the Jewish people. The first time is that when we left Mitzrayim, Amalek attacked us. And the answer is that the child told Mordechai, don't be afraid, al tir mi pachad pison. When Amalek attacked quickly, out of nowhere, we didn't know where they were coming from behind, like cheaters. So then, said Hashem, don't be afraid. I'm with you at the initial attack when Amalek comes to you. So Mordechai said, the first attack from Amalek, Hashem took care of us, even though it was sudden. The second one, years later, Amalek attacked again, and they wanted to have war against the Jewish people. And we know from Rashi, the end of Bamidbar, the second time Amalek attacked the Jewish people in the Midbar, what did Amalek do? Anybody remember what Amalek did when they tried to attack the Jewish people? What was their secret weapon the second time? Nobody remembers? They dressed up like another nation. They dressed up like Canaanim, so the Jewish people wouldn't know who they were. So to that, the child said, Davru davru vilo yakum. They have plans. They have a whole sneak attack of the Jewish people. But do you know what? Lo yakum. It didn't work out. Hashem foiled their plans again. And the third time is with Haman. Haman is the third attack of Amalek on the Jewish people. And he viciously planned the annihilation of the Jewish people. But to understand the answer of the Adzikna, that until I'm old, you need to know another medrash. When Haman came to his cohorts, his group, and he said, I want to take care of the Jewish people. So they told Haman, be careful of the Jewish people, because their God is a vengeful God. And if you mess with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, he's going to take it out on you. So the medrash says that Haman told them, nothing to fear. God is old. He's weak. He's been around for centuries. He's old. He can't help the Jewish people anymore. Right, unfortunately, when non-Jewish painters, they always paint God. So how do they always paint God? What does he look like? An old man, right? You go to the Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo. God's an old man. That's how they perceive God. Obviously, we should never have any physical perceptions of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but that's how the non-Jews view God. An old man. He's weak. He can't do it anymore. So to that, what did Hashem respond? Hashem said through the child, V'ad zikna anihu, you think I'm old? Don't worry, I've been around for a long time. I can handle this. And even if you think I'm old, I'm going to take care of you, Haman, and I'm going to carry, sustain, and save the Jewish people at the end of the day. That is approach number one to this midrash. And that's the classic approach of the Vilna Gaon. There is a beautiful pshat on a twist on this from Rav David Cohen. Rav David Cohen was Rosh Yeshiva in Chevron. So he writes in his Sefer Yemei HaPurim that when Hashem uses the phrase Ani Hu, which is the expression used over here, Ani Hu always means that Hashem is showing that everything in the world, whether it's perceived good or bad, comes from Hashem. Ani Hu. You got into a car accident, says Hashem, Ani Hu. You had a baby that was healthy and wonderful and beautiful, Ani Hu. Things aren't going well in school, Shidduch fell through, person is sick, Anihu, says Hashem, I'm behind that also. Don't think it's anybody else. Anihu, I'm behind all of that. And that perception where we sometimes make a mistake, says Rav David Cohen, where we think Hashem is only there when everything is fluffy and wonderful and it's bunnies and rainbows. And when things are bad and unfortunate and sad, that's not Hashem. So Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to remind you, Anihu, I'm both of those things. I'm the good and the bad. And therefore, part of Emunah and Bitachon is realizing that also the bad things are part of Hashem's plan as well. And therefore, Hashem is telling Mordechai, this issue right now with Haman, that you think is bad and the worst thing in the world, says Hashem, I'm behind that also. I'm also behind Haman. And for now, Anihu, it's going to be okay because it's part of my plan. So that's a different approach within the realm of the Vilna Gaon. But let's move on. There's a second beautiful approach from Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger. Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger is the Rav of Gilo, which is a city in Eretz Yisrael. So he writes in Elohei Moadai, and he talks about there are three periods of tsaros for the Jewish people. Whenever there's a tragedy for the Jewish people, there's three stages. There's leading up to the tragedy, there's the tragedy itself, and then, you know, the post-game analysis after the tragedy occurs. So he explains, when a tsar is forming, we're unsure how to act against our enemies. The Gemara in Megillah says that the Jewish people complained that Mordechai was getting them in trouble, right? Imagine you are a Jew in the days of Shushan, and everything's going great, right? Everything's wonderful. You're friends with the king, your sister Esther, your cousin Esther is the queen, everything is great. And that Yatz Mordechai cannot just bow down to Haman for 5 seconds. Right? We could get out of all this trouble, just Mordechai would get over himself and just bow down, and we could be done with this, and Haman would leave us alone. Can you imagine being upset, right? You're doing what you're supposed to do, you're keeping to yourself, and Mordechai is like, no, I'm not going to bow down to Haman, and now we all have to suffer because of Mordechai. So there was a lot of tension, says the Gemara. Mordechai was not Mr. Popular at that time. And therefore, the child told Mordechai, don't be scared of Haman. And you have rishus to start up with him. You're doing the right thing. Don't be scared. Al pisom mipachad. Don't be afraid. You're on the right track. Don't be afraid of Haman. Stand up for what's right. Stand up for your principles. Do the right thing. Don't be afraid of what everybody else is saying around you. Keep going and fight the good fight. That's the response, the first response. The second thing is during the tsar itself. When we are in trouble and the pain is existing at that time, sometimes you don't know what to do. And the answer almost always is to go back to the Torah, more limudat Torah, more tefillah, doing the right thing. And therefore the child says to him, Davru Davar, continue to use the Dibur. Davin, learn Torah. That's how you get through a tzara. V'lo yakum ki manukal. And at the end of the day, their plans won't work out because Hashem is with us when we daven and we learn Torah. What about after the fact? Says Rav Schlesinger, the tzara has passed. We've beat it. There's a calm after the storm. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, what's practical for next time? So Hashem says, the derech of Mordechai is always correct. V'yad zikna, even when we're old and it continues, and it's the same tsar again, and another person comes to attack the Jewish people, you go back to that plan again. That plan of attack never gets old. Tefillah and Torah and Shuva never gets old. It's never out of style. It's always good for the Jewish people. So that's Rav Schlesinger's approach number two. So I gave very quickly the Vilna Gaon, put that on the side. Rav Schlesinger, put that aside. I want to spend the most time and the rest of the evening really discussing, for me personally, a pshat that I very much connected with the first time I saw by Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. Who's Rav Yaakov Ettlinger? Rav Yaakov Ettlinger was the Rebbe of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. He was the major posek in Germany in the 1800s. And Rav Hirsch learned by him as a young man, and he had tremendous influence on the course of German history and German Jewry. So he has a number of important works, the Binyan Sion, his book of Shaos and Shuvos. He has a work on Chumash called the Minchas Ani. And at the end of Parshas Tetzaveh, he writes something that is so beautiful, I would love to share it with you. So let's go piece by piece how Rav Yaakov Ettlinger understands the Medrash. He says, when Mordechai found out about the Gzeirah, it says that he walked into the streets of Shushan, screaming and crying out. Now, we all imagine what Gadol Yisrael looked like, right? A person goes to a tzaddik, things are difficult, you imagine calm, serene, not disturbed, focused on amunah bitachon, is that the image you have of a tzaddik? Screaming, crying through the streets, pulling out their hair, tearing their clothing. Ay, what's going to be? That's not the image we usually think of. And Mordechai's actions seem to be not how we picture tzidkus and righteousness and bitachon and emunah. So what's going on over here? So the answer is that this was the very concern of Mordechai. Mordechai was scared that he was scared. Do you understand? Mordechai was scared that he was not content. He was looking inside himself and saying, what's wrong with me? Why am I scared? I'm supposed to be the manig of Klal Yisrael. I'm supposed to be taking charge. Where's my emunah? Where's my bitachon? And Mordechai is scared. He's frightened. And he's scared that he's scared. And he doesn't know what to do. And that's his first issue. We're going to discuss three things Mordechai was nervous about. His first issue was, is that he was scared that he was scared. The Al-Sheikh writes in the end of Bereishis that Yaakov was gripped with fear that Esau was approaching. And he says that Yaakov was scared again that he was scared. Yaakov's fear of Esau was that, where's my bitachon? Where's my amunah? How come I'm not confident that Hashem's going to carry me through? So the Navi Yeshaya says, Pachtu b'tzion chatayim. When there's fear in Sion, it means that there are sins. And therefore, this really bothered Mordechai a lot. So to this point, the young child said, Altira mipachad pison. You can't control your initial fears. You're a human being. People get scared. And no one should ever, ever, ever get depressed that they're nervous about something, that they're anxious, there's anxiety, that there's fear. It's a normal, human, and a healthy reaction to the world around us. The first reaction, the pachad pison, the first reaction is allowed to be scared. And therefore it says, losira mi pachad. Don't be afraid of the fear. That's how you touch the pasuk. I'm not going to be afraid of being afraid. It's okay to be human. And it's okay to feel emotion. And it's okay to be honest with yourself. You don't have to put on a facade and say, oh, Baruch Hashem, everything's going to be great. It'll be fantastic. And everything's drowning around me and the ship's going down. But you know, Baruch Hashem, everything's fine. That's not what a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants. You're a human being. At a certain point, get yourself together, you pick yourself up, and then you'll proceed with your Amun and Bitachon. But it's okay, says Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, to be human, and to feel emotions, and to pull yourself through after you've realized what the situation is. There's a beautiful piece from Rav Mordechai Miller. Rav Mordechai Miller was the head of the Gateshead Seminary, appointed by Rav Dessler himself. So he asks a question in the end of Parshas Vayetze, in his beautiful Sefer Sabbath Shiurim. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yaakov and says, your father-in-law hates you, he's going to kill you, you need to leave his house, go back to Eretz Yisrael. Right, familiar with that part? Right? And then, he says, he goes to his wives, and they go out to the field, they need a quiet place to talk, and Yaakov starts hemming and hawing, making excuses. You know, your father-in-law, he's not so nice to me anymore. And your brothers-in-law, my brother-in-law, they're not so nice to me either. And the business isn't good. And what about the kids and the chinuch? There's no Beis Yaakov's here. And what do you have to, we're out of town. We got to go back to New York. He's on and on and on and on. And finally he says, oh, and by the way, also, Hashem said we have to leave. So says Rabbi Miller, what is Yaakov doing? Hashem told him, get up and get out of here. And then he's like making up all these excuses why he has to go. Start the conversation and say, Kaddish Baruch Hu said, we gotta go. So what's the answer? So he quotes in the name of his Rebbe Rav Dessler. This is not found anywhere in Michta Meliyahu. It's only found here. It's Mipi Hashmua only over here. I'm so enamored by this that I actually called Rabbi Miller's sons in England once, saying, where is this in Michta Meliyahu? They said, they don't know. They said, this is only, he writes in the footnotes that he has a certain handwritten manuscript from Dessler, and this is it's from there, but it was never published in Michta Meliyahu. Says Rabbi Miller in the name of his Rabbi Rav Dessler, Yiras Shemayim is a precious, precious gem, and you only take out a precious gem when you really need to. Don't pretend to have Yiras Shemayim when you don't. Don't put on a show. Yaakov came to his wives and said, I'm going to be honest with you. Hashem told me that we have to leave. But I'm not going to sit here and Baruch Hashem you all day and say, you know, Hashem told me, you know, I'm such a moon and bitachon, like I really want to leave. Do you know why I really want to leave? Because I hate your father so much. and I can't stand to be here. He's mean, he's obnoxious, he steals from me, and that's really why I don't want to be here. And therefore, says Reb Dessler, Yaakov's lesson is, you have to be honest in your Yiras Hashem. Don't put on a show of having more Yiras Hashem than you do have. Because that's not fair to you, and it's not fair to other people. And Yiras Hashem is a precious, precious, precious diamond. And you don't take it out and expose it whenever you want. You need to show when Yiras Hashem only when necessary. And that's the same thing here. Often we like to put on a show, we like to say, we're very stable and everything is great. Now, it doesn't mean you should walk around talking about all your insecurities. When I was in graduate school, I was in graduate school, and I had to take a class essentially titled Spirituality. It was the weirdest class I ever took. I had to sit in a room with a bunch of people for like 2 hours in the summer, like 4 days a week. And essentially, like every single person in the room confessed like to the worst things they'd ever seen or done. Everyone was crying. It was the strangest thing in the world. I heard things I never heard before, never want to hear again. It was horrifying. But in the non-Jewish world, as we know from television and movies, there is the sense of exposing every single insecurity you have and putting on display and then making $10 million from that. Like, that is an industry of making money off your insecurities. I'm not saying you need to go around telling everybody all of your problems and issues. But personally, a person is allowed to feel nervous. A person is allowed to say, I'm anxious. You don't have to put on a show. But someone asks you, say, how are you doing? You can say, I'm doing okay. Had a tough day, whatever it is. But you don't have to put Hashem up as a guard to show how your real feelings are. That is lesson number one over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Mordechai, it's okay to be nervous. It's okay to be scared. It's okay to have anxiety. Let's go to lesson number two. The Gemara in Megillah asks, what exactly Mordechai was saying as he was screaming through the streets of Shushan? So the Gemara says that he was saying, Haman is above Achashverosh, and Haman's in charge, now Achashverosh is on the bottom. And that was his complaint. Why? What's so bad about that? Haman and Achashverosh, the same thing, pick your poison. Who cares that Haman's in charge? We have a pasuk in Mishlei that says that Lev Malachim b'yad Hashem, that the hearts of kings are in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Without going too much into the details, essentially once a person becomes a world leader, Hashem has the ability to control their hearts. He overrides their bechira. They lose their free choice. And Hashem is allowed to play with their heartstrings, to do what they need for the sake of, world events. But until that point, a regular person, you and me over here, we have bechira. Hashem does not change our free will. So says Rav Yaakov Adlinger, what was Mordechai's issue? He was nervous because when Achashverosh was in charge and he was running the show and he was being wicked to the Jewish people, so then, okay, Hashem can change Achashverosh's mind and turn him into a different person and clean everything up for the Jewish people. But once Haman is running the show, is Haman the leader of the free world? No, he's a regular person. And therefore, Mordechai was scared that once Haman is running the show, and the rule is Hashem doesn't change the hearts of a regular person, they still have Bechira, well then, who's going to save the day now? Meaning, Hashem is not going to change Haman's mind. Haman has free will. He's a regular person. And therefore, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? My only saving grace in Mordechai was that Achashverosh was crazy, and Hashem's going to change his mind and his heart, and everything's going to be okay at the end of the day. But now Haman's in charge. So listen to what the response is. It's true that a Kaddish Baruch Hu won't change the plans of the Baal Bechira. But it doesn't mean that a Kaddish Baruch Hu can't save Tzadikim. And therefore, that's why he says, Utsu Eitz of Adavu Davar. All of the plans that people have, it's true. You have free choice. Does that prevent Hashem from arranging the world to stop your plans? No. Free choice doesn't mean, or a person's free choice doesn't mean, that Hashem doesn't have a way to get you out of that situation. We often struggle with people, or we often struggle with situations because we try to change people. We say, I'm going to get involved. I'm going to help this person. I'm going to change their bad mitos. My friend X, they snore, they have issues of kas, they giggle too much, whatever it is. I'm going to go and I'm going to change their midos, right? I'm going to come and say, make them a better person. We're not all quite there yet, but it's most acute with a spouse. So a person comes to a marriage and they see something they don't like about their spouse's midos, and they say, I'm going to go and change it. It is a recipe for disaster. You do not change your spouse's midos. It is a recipe for disaster. You can't. You can't change the way the person is the way they are. You're not going to change their midos. And we often struggle with people because of that. There's a beautiful story told by Rav Yankala Miller. Rav Yankala Miller is a badachan. He's like a Hasidish comedian. So he tells the story of a young Hasidish Bachar who was going off the derech and not part of the fold anymore. He still looked the same, but still was interested in other things. So he walked into an electronics store and he pointed to the... he was a Jewish owner of an electronics store. And he said, I want that television. So the owner said, I don't sell televisions to Hasidish Bachrim. So he said, okay. So he walked out. So the came back the next day. He shaved his payas off and shaved his beard, his facial hair. And he walked back into the store. He put on, you know, white shirt, black pants. And he said, I want to buy that television. And the owner said, I don't sell televisions to Hasidish Bachrim. Get out of my store. Okay, Steve's, I guess he recognized me. So he goes back the next day, and now he takes off, shaves his head. He's no more wearing black and white. He's wearing jeans, regular weekday street clothing, and he says, I want to buy that television. So the guy says, I don't sell televisions to Hasidic Shabachrim. So the guy, what am I supposed to do? So he says, this is it. He goes out the next day, gets all tatted up, tattoos everywhere, earrings, even the weird one, like we can see through the earlobe, the whole thing, right? Totally changes his look, looks totally different. He comes in and he says, I want to buy that television. And the guy says, I don't sell televisions to Hasidic Bachrim. So the kid loses it. He says, what do I have to do? How do you know I'm a Hasidic Bachrim? He says, because that's a microwave, it's not a television. So, no matter who you are, you cannot change much of who you... You can't change. It's very hard to change. It's true you have Bechira, but at certain points you can't change. You are who you are. And the person you're dealing with is who they are. The guy who wants the television 800 times in a row, he's a Hasidic Bachrim. He can't change it. He's not going to do anything about it. It is who he is. You can't change the person at the end of the day. But we forget that just like we have Bechira, they also have Bechira. And too often relationships collapse because instead of taking the person for who they are, again, unless they have a destructive personality flaw, addiction, things like that, we try to change the person, and that's how we're going to fix them. So Mordechai understood that for the most part, a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't swoop in and change people. And therefore, the other option is to change the way we interact with them. And therefore, a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Utsu Eitz of Davar Davar. Hashem says, I'm going to take care of it. I don't have to change the person to make things happen. You can still accomplish your goals and do what you need to do without changing everyone around you to fit your marching orders. And that, says Rav Yaakov Ellinger, was nervous issue number 2, solved by Hashem. You don't have to change everybody. You have to figure out a plan. Hashem will take care of it. But you don't solve the world by changing everybody else around you. The final worry was for the sins of the Jewish people involving bowing down to the Tzelem, the Avodah Zarah of Haman, and partaking of the Sudas HaChashverosh. That was very, very bothersome to Mordechai. Very bothersome. How are we going to get out of this? All these terrible Averos. The Malachi Asharis initially complained to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Bria Sa'olam that Hashem shouldn't make man. Why? Because they're going to fail and they're going to continue to mess up. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Ches tells us the following story. We've heard that message before, right? They said, don't make man. And Hashem said, don't know, it's going to be fine. So there's a follow-up. By the door of the Mabul, and by the door of the Migdal Bavel, so they sinned. And do you know what the Malachim said to Hashem? What'd they say? What would you have said? I told you so. I told you so. I told you so. So Hashem answered the Malachim. But guess which pasuk he answered them with. Guess which pasuk the answer to the Malachim was. The answer was as follows. V'yad zikna ani hu. V'yad seva ani esbol. Ani asisi v'yan esav ani esbol v'yamalait. The same answer that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Mordechai was the same answer that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Malachim. Meaning what? Says Hashem to the Malachim, I have all the patience in the world for the Jewish people. I have all the patience in the world. I'll wait. They're going to come back. They're going to do the right thing. I have patience. So Mordechai was scared. What's going to be with the Jewish people? The suit of Ahasuerus, bowing down, they're going off the Darach. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Mordechai, relax. I have all the patience in the world. I'll wait for Klal Yisrael to come back. It'll be better. I'm very patient. And my children will come back to me. They'll realize the right thing to do. They'll realize the right way to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I have all the patience in the world. And this is the answer he gave to him. The Tomer Devora, of Moshe Cordovero, so he has a piece in the beginning where the first mimers, he talks about Hashem's being kelerach apayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's being slow to anger. He reflects on this idea as well, Hashem's being slow to anger, his patience to the Jewish people. The Mishnah in the beginning of the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos says Hashem waited 10 generations from Adam to Noach to destroy the world. Why? To show that Hashem has patience. And sometimes we get frustrated. Either we get frustrated with ourselves, or we say, I still make the same mistakes, and I still have the same problems. And you know what Hashem is saying to us in Shemayim? V'yadzikna niyaspol. I'm going to be here for a long time. I have all the patience for you. You'll come back and you'll try again. Now, it doesn't mean I have patience and therefore disregard everything I'm telling you, says Hashem. I have patience when we're trying to get back on track. I have all the patience in the world. You'll come back, you'll try again, and you'll work harder, and it will work out as well. It happens just as a side point. Rav Avraham C. Kluger has a beautiful piece on Purim where he says, why did it all happen through children? Why all through children? Because Purim is ad lo yada, to not have any das, to realize that Hashem is control of the world. And therefore children also in halacha don't have das, they don't have full understanding, and therefore that's why these statements came through children. But at the end of the day, the lesson of the third piece is still the same. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu has patience for us. We get frustrated with ourselves. We say, what's going to be? I can't get my act together. I can't pull my life together. I can't work on this issue. I can't fix it, whatever it is. And Hashem says, what are you being so impatient for? I have patience for you. What are you getting patient for yourself? I have all the patience for you to come back and try again at the end of the day. And after Mordechai heard these three answers, the three answers being, it's okay to be nervous. The second answer being, you don't have to change everybody around you. You just have to learn to deal with them in the right way. And the last one being, I have all the patience in the world. So now I understand why Mordechai had a big smile on his face and he was besimcha. Who wouldn't feel great after hearing something like that? That Hashem loves you no matter what. That Hashem is going to be there for you. It's okay to be nervous. And Hashem will take care of it at the end of the day. Why would he not be besimcha? And when Haman heard that, he was enraged. He was so angry because he saw that with that attitude, of course the Jews are going to win. How are they not going to come out on top? And that's what set him off on that fit of rage. So just to bring it all together, this medrash and these psukim that we almost all of us recite at the end of Aleinu every single day is much more than meets the eye. We understand the source of those psukim now, where they come from, but perhaps deeper, what a beautiful message as we go out into the day. Again, it's not connected to Aleinu, but it is connected to the end of davening. When we go out into the day, and we step out of our rooms, we step out of shul, and we recite those three psukim, and we say, wow, what a different day. A day where I know that it's okay to struggle, and it's okay to be nervous. A day where I know that Hashem has other ways to fix things without changing every person's mind. And a day where I know that Hashem has all the patience for me, as long as I keep on trying and doing my best. And that is a good way to step into Purim, to appreciate the Medrash of Chazal, to appreciate the message of the children towards Mordechai, and to appreciate the end of our davening as well. It has been an immense, immense pleasure. Thank you very much. And we look forward to sharing Torah at some time in the future as well.